Ars Electronica, 2006. Simplicity, the art of complexity.
Hi. My talk, sorry, I'll be reading from the paper, so it might be a little bit boring, but I think the morning was very easy, and we can afford that. So the talk is entitled, When New Media Are No Longer New and Everyone Creates on the Internet. And my starting point is the topic of Ars Electronica 2006, which is simplicity, as we heard. What is simplicity today, and why is it so central for new media, communication, cyber, digital avant-garde art of 2006? The topic is good, old, and could have been expected. In addition, Transmediale 2005 theme was basics. Ars Electronica's themes over the last 10 years, as far as I can judge, were more or less reflecting what was happening in the scene. In 2003, year of software art, the theme was code, the language of our time. In 2002, year of faith into the power of politically minded art and activist projects, just before the war in Iraq was launched and ruined that faith, there was the topic was Unplugged Art as a Scene of Global Conflicts. There were a whole series of topics relating to gender, body, and sex, summarizing discourses of late 80s and 90s, such as Mimesis in 96, Flash Factor in 97, Life Science in 99, and Next Sex in 2000. And finally, Welcome to the Wild World of 1995, pointing to the rise of WWW technology and net art. So we shall ask, what is happening today that evokes such a topic as simplicity? Is it a sign of some kind of a crisis? What do people do when they are in crisis? They turn back to simple, basic things that supposedly won't prove wrong. There have been talks and texts on the crisis in new media art appearing all year round. There have been discussions, for instance, on Spectre mailing list in summer-autumn 2005, relating to closing or scaling down of media labs across the developed countries. And there have been texts and reviews stating or analyzing the ongoing changes. So I will try to look at the issue from the point of view of simplicity. Simple means authentic, true, basic. Simplicity can't deceit or make a mistake. Simplicity can't be forged. Simplicity is a kind of synonymous with bare life, with what nature does and simple people do. So here is the key. What people do today with communication technology? They blog, they contribute to encyclopedias, they share their photographs and videos, they date and maintain relationships with friends, they bookmark together, they link, they broadcast, and they map. And all these activities they perform every day, and dare I say, and I'm not mocking, without the media artists and institutions. Internet, WWW, and new media in the early days used to be inhabited by scientists, programmers, and artists. Today, with the dropping cost of technology and bandwidth, with wide use of mobile devices, we witness the true masterization of internet and more general communication technology. Shall I repeat that the worldwide amount of internet users reached 1 billion in 2005? So if there is a crisis in new media art, it is also because people do not need artists anymore to guide them through media experiences and to shape media experiences for them. As the book title and since beloved slogan, The Wisdom of Crowds, proves, the crowd became wise unlike it was traditionally understood. Full stop. Why does the wise crowd need anyone else? Everyone has become a content producer these days. People do creative things. They write diaries, photograph, annotate. There are platforms for publishing and managing all kinds of content created by users. There are open encyclopedias, friend of a friend networks, social bookmarking sites, group forming networks, photo blogs, blogs, collaborative mapping, visualization and sonification tools, not mentioning various digital products repositories. The range of social web platforms using manifestations of digital folklore and mind practices of everyday lives to possibilities of professionalization and education is really vast. Let me give you some flavor of the platforms I'm talking about. LiveJournal, a blogging service, has a very distinct aura in the Russian part of the internet. Usually researchers say that blogging is a kind of new journalism, and the main activity of bloggers is commentary on political news. As shown by others, the typical blog is maintained by teenage or adolescent females. Russian LiveJournal, and in Russia, this particular service has become synonymous to blog in general, as Evgeny Gorny demonstrates, was firstly populated by male professionals, including internet workers, journalists, writers, philosophers, and artists. So in Russia, LiveJournal for some years represented a smoky downtown cafe it is super cool to be at. And some more geography-specific facts on Russian blogging. It is a well-known campaign that was called Anti-Barbie Campaign of 2005. So there was organized an online contest for the most beautiful Russian girl, and anyone could enter their profile and be voted for. The one getting most votes would go to Miss Universe contest. Soon after it was launched, a LiveJournal user has found a profile of a girl, the photograph of whom you see, breaking the Barbie 1960-90 canon, who has entered her date into the contest. A large voting campaign was launched over LiveJournal in the case of a few days, and when over 10,000 original users have voted for Alena Pisklova, which is the name of the girl, making her enter the semi-final, the service hosting this contest has announced she didn't qualify to represent Russia in Miss Universe as she was only 15. So she lied when she entered her data into the contest. So basically she was that close to actually winning the contest. The history of some of these tools, as well as of these activities, trace back not only but as well to early net art practitioners and new media art practices in general. The origin of today's blogs and photoblogs could be also found in online diaries and reports such as Kesari Hoffman's and Eva Fogilmuth's Siberian Deal project from 1995. That looked like that at that time. And Siberian Deal consisted of texts and picture files sent regularly from different locations on the road to Majordoma Kronopop in Vienna, who forwarded information to the online report through which viewers could follow the travel, interact, and the authors were able to react to their questions and remarks. So it's very much like today's blogging. And then there was a project, Visitor's Guide to London by Heath Bunting from 1995. That's the remains of the project, unfortunately. That was suggesting an alternative sightseeing tour, so basically alternative mapping. To continue, Micromusic, a platform for 8-bit music, was co-created by a former member of eToy group that got a golden Nika hit Ars Electronica in 1996 with their Hijack project. However, not only artists or engineers create platforms. Since a platform becomes one of the leading technocultural objects, an important organizational genre on the internet, corporations make special focus on them. Corporations buy existing platforms and create their own. LiveJournal, created by an enthusiast student and based on open source software, existed as an independent project from March 1999 till January 2005, when it was bought by SixApart, one of the largest blog provider, also owning a TypePad, which I will mention later. There appear also announcements concerning future Microsoft's Windows Live, a platform that will unite a set of personal internet services and software and will include search, email, instant messaging, file and photo sharing, PC-based calling, and many more. There is also a trend called moblogging, from mobile weblogging, meaning maintaining an internet blog by posting photographs and comments to it from a mobile phone or a PDA. Nokia, for instance, equips its suitable phone models with software such as LiveBlog that gathers all information produced with your phone, including SMS, photo, and video. And as follows from a Nokia official guide to moblogging, it automatically organizes your digital media between your mobile phone and PC so you can view, search, edit, and share your images and messages. So such blogs are published online by services such as the above mentioned typepad.com. Apart from the issue of surveillance that is getting hotter and hotter these days, what comes to mind is actually actor network theory turned from an academic concept into an essential element of a capitalist enterprise. As Viktor Pelevin, a contemporary Russian writer, has noted, when one buys downhill skis, she also pays for the snow. Buying a phone with software enabling mob logging, one buys and signs up for a certain culture. Working and popular concept of mob logging is as central to Nokia and especially its sales department as, say, work of the phone engineers. Mob logging makes sure the features of the phone will be used and phones will be sold out. Technical and cultural production comes hand in hand, and maintaining a mob log, one is included into capitalist production cycle as much as working on assembling the phone itself. There have appeared recently a number of books, terms, and myths on blogging and other forms of internet activities, but what seems a more relevant concept to use when talking about these issues today is the popular concept of immaterial labor. The concept originates from Marx's debate on post-Fordist production. Among key figures, there are such Italian thinkers as Maurizio Lazzarato, Paolo Virno, and Tiziana Terranova. According to them, labor does not any longer produce material commodities. It is formed by montage of humans and technology, and often performed outside of the official experiences in the free time. The production of surplus value tend to depend on expansion of commodities, as Tiziana Terranova explains, of information-rich commodities that are not destroyed in the act of consumption, but persist as events able to transform the sensorial basis of subjectivity. So the creation of wealth depends on production of subjectivity, on cultural production, and based on the usage of the whole time of life. Precarious cultural production becomes central to this type of economy. For Virno, culture provides training in precariousness and variability, and it drives innovation. For Marazzi, cultural production helps in identifying potential future social needs and desires. For Terranova, culture provides a new type of product, a commodity that is more akin to a work of art rather than a material commodity. The worker experiments as an artist, transforming subjectivity. So immaterial labor feels more like art. Immaterial labor is paradoxical because it contains potential for emancipation as well as for intensification of exploitation. As Terranova sums up, and that's the last quote, this mode also signals the emergence of new machines of control and subjectification, which reimpose hierarchical relations at the service of social reproduction and the production of surplus value. These are moments which turn qualitative, intensive differences into quantitative relations of exchange and equivalence, which enclose the open and dissipative potential of cultural production into differentiational hierarchies, which accumulate the rewards of work carried out by larger social assemblages. Not hard to recognize the role our platforms, their users, and content can play in this picture. But turning back to new media, art, and simplicity, I would like in the second part of my talk to suggest you a kind of typology of platforms and describe certain type of platforms which work yield some peculiar fruits, aesthetic and even political and social. I've written on three platforms, two of which actually built by new media artists, which is micromusic.net, which is a label and a community focused on 8-bit music that got, I think, also due to the work of this resource, a wide recognition as a musical phenomenon. Then it is runme.org, a software art repository that we creators believe contributed to software art becoming a more open and interesting thing that it could have become without it. And the third one, udav.com, which is a Russian language-based literary resource that actually, in my opinion, producing a kind of a new literary trend of what I call male literature. I've tried to open the window so that nothing really pornographic is seen, because it's very brutal. So, among the big variety of platforms, there is this one kind of them that attracts my attention the most, and it is, as I call them, the singular interface platforms. We can use the design distinction to differentiate between single interface platforms and multiple interface platforms. With the single interface platforms, there is, so to say, one entrance, a point of concentration of maximum understanding of the resource. Such single interface may consist of categories, being a quite straightforward database interface, as in the case of Runme. You see on the left side there are categories and subcategories, but it's not the only taxonomy, but it's structured that way. Or it can include various elements, such as in Micromusic, there is also a kind of database with submitted MP3 files, but there is also software that you can use to create those files, and there is also MicroTalk you can join, and kind of various things. And if you visit a multiple interface platform, there is never a single page of attention or main entrance for everyone. The page everyone refers to. In a blog, you navigate through personal blogs, through photographs and cross-references by means of usernames and links. There are, of course, some systematizing tools, search, but the difference is there. It may seem banal, but it is an unnoticeable distinction that at the level of ideas leads to another distinction. Singular interface platforms, through their singularity, turn to be devoted to some theme, a shared horizon, aesthetic, creative, and even political. With Runme, it is software art. With Micromusic, it is 8-bit music. And with woodaf.com, this is mail literature. If at the multiple interface platforms, there are tools that help maintain the healthy functioning of the system, for instance, abuse teams in the case of blogs, with singular interface platforms, there is a need for moderators whose responsibility is the control over the development of the interface, which in fact means the control over the content development of the entire system. Such centralization renders the moderation very crucial. It should be quite strict, but also open enough to be able to include and not only exclude. Correct moderation, well-taken construction of a system, means survival of the platform and success of the theme. At runme.org, we have a team of moderators. At Micromusic, there is also a team of moderators. And with udav.com, there is a single guy who receives all the written creations that are to be published at the resource. And he is the kind of human filter that filters out something that he doesn't like. If with multiple interface platforms users visit selected pages, with single interface platforms a user interested in the topic the platform is devoted to goes almost through the entire database. Contributing to such platform, user enters and co-creates a content-full context. With such platform, it is possible to develop an artistic movement, to add some lacking elements to creative activity, giving it a theoretical, social, or political dimension. Single interface platforms appear as reactions to the development of a particular cultural creative practice they focus at. They are quickly built by a few enthusiasts, which is doable with modern technology. Platforms need to be open and customizable, moreover, be able to change significantly according to the needs and demands of a cultural practice and social groups of people it works with. Such platforms accumulate quite a number of creative products that in turn attract new people and new products. Platforms often suggest new modes of education, knowledge building, creative work, and supportive social environment, as well as models for development of some creative activity. Working with gray zones of cultural production, with grassroots practices, such platform can create significant artistic and cultural phenomena and even transfer the practice onto a different cultural level. If I try to summarize my talk, I could also say that what is really exciting here is the mutual dependence between technical forms and cultural entities, so-called politics of algorithms. Software systems articulated by cultural concerns and creative activities informed and driven by software forms. So, the dream of net artists came true. People can exchange their creative work without institutions and corporations. They can build collaborations, communicate, they can do art. People have technologies now. But there are different technologies at hand and different ways of dealing with them. Is it simplicity? Maybe, but most likely it is a new kind of complexity.